in front of me, Akeem, were thousands of women. Thousands of women eagerly awaiting what I had to say.
Mm-hmm.
It was an extraordinary moment. I was absolutely speechless, but we had a PR agency, and I remember being prodded, sort of elbowed to say something. And I started speaking. I don't know what I said. I don't know if I recited the corporate messaging about why you need to get out there and, you know, and be healthy. But I know that they cheered and they clapped and it was such an immense wave of support and love that my voice was actually provoking that reaction in them. It was a moment when I said, darn, this is a pretty good gig. I like this.
Hey, this is Achim Novak, executive coach and host of the My Fourth Act podcast. If life is a five-act play, how will you spend your fourth act? I have conversations with exceptional humans who have created bold and unexpected fourth acts. Listen and be inspired. And please rate us and subscribe on whatever platform you are listening on. Let's get started. Welcome, Rosemary Ravenal. Rosemary is a seasoned public relations pro. She brings more than three decades of experience as a communications expert at the highest levels of the U.S. mainstream, Hispanic, and Latin American markets. Rosemary was an on-air talent with MSNBC and is the past president of the Hispanic Public Relations Association. She most recently served as the VP of Public Relations for Univision before starting her own communications training firm, simply called Rosemary Ravenal. Rosemary started this firm at a time in her life when many other people choose to retire. And that's a conversation I very much want to have with you. Welcome, Rosemary.
Thank you, Achim. I'm honored to be here.
I'm honored to have you. I like to start every conversation with a question where we go back to childhood, because our dreams and aspirations as children, sometimes they're like a flight of fancy and sometimes they come true. So when you go back to younger Rosemary, did you have a role model? Did you know who you wanted to be when you grew up?
Oh, I wish I had a quick answer, Akeem, because I grew up as a very lonely little girl in a traumatic series of changes, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about my being in exile from Cuba when I was 8 years old, but the circumstances surrounding that really shaped me. So I really didn't, because I didn't grow up in my native culture long enough to establish those role models. I grew up in a mostly Anglo, that is non-Hispanic environment. And so I gravitated to those role models that were part of maybe the circle of a small circle of young friends I had, and some of my teachers. And I'll tell you that I learned English from Nancy Drew books, the Nancy Drew mystery.
Yes.
And if I were to say, looking back at my life when I was 10, 12 years old, I really wanted to be a sleuth, a problem solver, a multi-talented thinker who just found those clues and those hidden treasures that just helped make everybody's lives better. And that was such a powerful example. And I wanted to be a Nancy Drew. And, you know, much later in life, Achim, I found out in looking back at, well, who actually was the author of the Nancy Drew series. And then, in fact, there were all these ghost writers and they were paid a pittance. But that women as prominent as Hillary Clinton and Sonia Sotomayor had the same association with the Nancy Drew character. So I feel that I wasn't really on a bad track back then. And it's interesting because that was how I learned English. And at the same time, I became really identified with this character.
A word from your sponsor. That's me. I invite you to go to the website associated with this podcast, www.myfourthact.com. You will find other equally inspiring conversation with great humans. And you will also learn more about the My Fourth Act Mastermind groups, where cool people figure out how to chart their own fourth acts. Please check it out. And now back to the conversation. And as you describe the qualities of Nancy Drew, and I have to confess to our listeners, I know you socially, Rosemary, so you're not a stranger. I immediately thought, well, that actually describes the Rosemary Ravenel I know. Not a literal sleuth, but the qualities of how you serve people, which is kind of cool. Since you alluded to coming from Cuba as a young girl, you know, and I have a similar bicultural background as a German boy who left Germany when he was 6 years old to grow up in Portugal and other countries. Because you're in the business now of helping your clients have, I'd say, the most amplified personal voice they can have, how did you, as a young girl, figure out how to have Rosemary's voice? Was that possible? I heard about assimilating into Anglo culture. What do you remember from just that journey coming from one place to another and fitting in?
Sure. It's interesting because public speaking has been with me all my life, although speaking was extraordinarily difficult for me when I was a child. Mm. I spent several years in Catholic boarding school, and the nuns were very, very disciplinarian and rather heavy-handed. Mm. And so I grew up in fear of these authority figures. And I was the only child who did not speak English. And this lasted for quite some time. It was my first time away from home. I developed really tremendous emotional problems. And it was never diagnosed until I was in my 20s that I developed really a severe trauma that led to depression. But it manifested mostly in stuttering, in stammering. Mm. I developed a terrible stammer in Spanish. And then when I started to speak English, it was a struggle to speak it without stammering. I didn't want to be embarrassed in front of my friends. We're talking elementary school. But I remember clearly, I must have been 10 years old, and I was in the line at the boarding school, waiting in line to go into the cafeteria. And I told a joke in English. Mm. And the girls around me laughed. It was such a moment of sunshine. It was as if the skies had opened, there was this heaven that just awaited. Ah, they understood me and they laughed. What a marvelous thing. And it was such a seminal moment that when I think back, I savor it and I say, well, maybe that was really a premonition, sort of a calling that I would become a public communicator and public speaker.
And you remind me of how powerful the use of language is and can be, and how it can accelerate our careers. And if we don't use it well, it can also be a blocker, you know. You've had this very illustrious career for over 3 decades with major companies, and you're much too modest to name drop. So I'm going to do it for you. So some of your clients are the HBO Latin America, the Latin Grammys, Goya, Sony Ericsson, Revlon, Toyota. And this is just the beginning of the list. So the list is endless, and you've done very cool work in the public relations space for brands that we all know. I know that when we peel back and look what happens behind the scenes, there probably were moments when you go, gosh, I just love doing this. This is why I'm doing it. Or there probably also were moments of complete insanity where you went, why the heck? Could you just give us a glimpse? Because I want to get us to what you're doing today, but this is the framework that got you to where you are today. So yes. What are some moments that stand out?
you know, I actually wanted to be a broadcast journalist. That's what I studied. Mm-hmm. But public relations called because it was a great way to make money. I'm talking early 1980s in New York City. Mm-hmm. I wanted in the worst way to be independent, have my own apartment, you know, be self-sustaining and sort of get into a very sexy career track. And journalism didn't pay as much. Public relations did. So I was lured over to the other side, as people in journalism would say.
And you sold out.
I sold out. Shamelessly. And it was good for a long time. I worked at an ad agency. That was my first job. And then I went to a publishing house. And then I went to Avon, the cosmetic company, the cosmetic giant.
Sure.
And at the time, I mean, they were really the, you know, the top of the mountain in terms of a global company, extraordinarily successful, 100-year legacy. And I went to work on 57th Street and off of Fifth Avenue in New York. Mm-hmm. It was a dream come true. It was, you know, I had an office that had a view of Central Park, imagine. And I couldn't believe it. I was hired to be the manager of public relations for Latin America. Mm-hmm. I was their ambassador, playing off of my cultural and linguistic abilities. I never knew when I was in college that my language, my fluency in Spanish would serve me so well. And I took the job. And when I realized that this was just an extraordinarily powerful job was when I was sent to Latin America to do a tour on behalf of something that was totally new, which was Avon Women's Running. At the time, Avon, through Catherine Switzer, the first woman to actually compete in the Boston Marathon, they were looking to establish a full fitness, wellness, beauty within and without, external and internal beauty for women. Obviously, that was a program that Avon was pioneering. And so I was sent as an ambassador to these countries to start the program and to start creating buzz and to basically talk it up so that there would be great interest and participation in coming out to the running events. So I find myself in Sao Paulo, Brazil. I don't speak Portuguese, but I speak Portunhol, a little mix of both. And I'm brought onto a stage to actually deliver sort of the words of encouragement in terms of the corporate rationale for why you should go out there and compete and be this full expression of who you are and do something that culturally at the time wasn't really accepted. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was taboo for women to be out there sweating, you know, and running on the streets. And so they were really going against the grain. So I get up on the stage of sorts in a huge park, and I